Stop standing in the sun. I can't see you.
That's Lashano Van Royen.
He's coming above you guys.
He's a falconer in the UAE.
I call the Peregrine Falcons the Iron Mike Tysons of the falcon world.
And right now, I'm following him to his car, a tan Mitsubishi SUV parked in the middle of the desert.
The summit gets extremely hot here.
There are no roads here, only sand. Sand and sun.
You'll probably hear my car is on as well with the aircon.
His car is running, and when he opens the door to his trunk, a wave of air conditioning hits me in the face.
Holy shit. I wasn't expecting that. Is this how you roll around?
Yeah. Inside is a sight I'll never forget for as long as I live.
What the heck?
You drive with these guys?
Yeah, of course.
Instead of car seats, there are four large perches. And on those perches, there are four birds of prey.
Harris hawk.
Hawk?
Yeah, two falcons.
Okay.
Falcon. And then there are owls that you guys are going to fly now. Yeah.
What? Yeah.
It doesn't smell bad, but there's definitely a strong animal scent. They're calm, completely unfazed. And I kind of get the feeling like I'm interrupting something. But this is all perfectly routine. Lashano drives around Dubai with falcons, hawks, and owls, and it's no big deal. This is every day in the life of a falconer in the UAE.
There's five of us. We have two head falconers and then three falconers that work, basically.
Interns.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
All five falconers live somewhere off the grid, taking care of 37 birds.
It's like a cabin. Right, and then you have your falcons in the cabin, and then outside you have the eagles, you have the hawks, and you have the owls that stay outside the whole year.
So you know, I had to go there. I'm Michael Motamedi, and you're listening to No Fixed Address, a show about the world's most extraordinary people. 2 years ago, I quit my job as a marketing executive and decided to travel indefinitely with my wife and baby. We sold our house, our cars, packed a bunch of clothes into a suitcase, and now live in a new country every month. And something I've come to love about living on the road is the people I meet, so I decided to start a podcast. That way you can meet them too. Today, we're going to a remote location just outside of Dubai to meet a falconer named Hendry Dutoit. Hendry's been doing this for a very long time. He's actually Lashano's boss.
So please, you can have a seat here.
I was randomly walking with an owl.
Just fed her, actually. Now I was just going to put her back in her cage.
Are these birds in here?
Yes. So they will take to you everywhere, but just wait here. Let me call them.
No worries.
This is going to be good. I mean, before we get into it, what do you think about these names, by the way? Lashano Van Royen and Hendry Dutoit?
I love Lashano's name. It sounds so royal.
I mean, when I hear Lashano Van Royen, I feel like I'm going to meet a fucking asshole. That's what I imagine in my head. But man, was he amazing. He was super nice. He's so humble.
He's one of the nicest guys I've ever met.
He's literally the nicest guy you'll ever meet in your life. But I'm just telling you, if you say like, hey, I'm going to go meet my friend Lashano Van Royen, every single person in the room is going to be like, bro, chill.
Well, I wonder if it's a South African thing because...
Yeah, because you got Hendry, what was it?
Hendry Dutoit.
Hendry, but it's three words. Hendry Dutoit.
Yeah. Lashano.
Lashano Van Royen, three words.
Yeah, we kind of stumbled onto a small expat community of South Africans who are all falconers, which is really interesting in itself.
Seriously, mind-blowing, to be honest. There was like a bunch of South Africans that have literally flown to Dubai to, you know, pursue their dreams of training falcons all day long.
It's amazing. And that's how we actually met. Well, through Lashano, we met Hendry and we met a couple of others, but we were really, really drawn to Hendry because he was so passionate. I mean, they all are, but Hendry's been doing this a long time.
I mean, you got to be super passionate to live in the middle of the desert of the UAE in a trailer, literally a trailer, 365 days out of the year, like small air conditioning box. Small TV, and all day long you're living and breathing with birds.
The birds sometimes live with them. It's part of the training. That kind of blew my mind.
For those of you guys that don't know, this is my wife, Vanessa, and she's the producer of this show. I have a personal question, intimate question for you, okay?
Okay.
You know, these birds, for the first, like, you know, half of their lives are literally, like, living and breathing with these falconers and these trainers in their homes, watching Netflix, eating breakfast, like, playing cards, like, some really weird shit from what I know. Would you be okay if I brought a bird into this relationship?
I think I'm definitely more of a dog person. I'm not sure how I would do with a bird. I don't know if I'm a bird person. I think it's a little much. It sounds like it's a third person you're bringing into the relationship.
But you know what's interesting? I never thought about it till right now. People do that with dogs all the time. They watch Netflix, they play games, they eat food with them, they feed them food. This is just happens to be a, like a predatory, large, freaking scary ass bird that's living in the house with you.
Yeah, I guess I brought our dog into our relationship and you didn't really have a choice over it.
That's true. But probably got to bring a bird now. Even the playing fields.
Cuddly baby, sweet kisses.
That's true. You're not kissing this bird.
This is an apex predator. It's serious.
So living in Dubai is obviously an acquired taste for a lot of people, but let alone living in the desert, we had to take a taxi from the main city of Dubai about an hour and a half, I think north, if I'm not mistaken, but I can be.
I have no idea which direction. I just remember that the GPS kind of went blank. Like it showed no buildings, no entrances, nothing where we were going.
Yeah. And the taxi guy was like, what's going on here? This is kind of weird. And then we saw this gate and we're like, that's the gate. He's like, there's no sign, sir. Are you sure that's the place? You're in a vast desert. You open the gate, you're in another vast desert.
Yeah, it's just to keep people out for sure.
Yeah.
And you know what, I don't know who it was. I think it was Lashano who told me this, that they don't actually interact with a lot of other falconers or people that would live out there because they're afraid to get diseases, to carry diseases onto the birds and then infect their whole compound.
Oh,
so
wow.
They're a little bit like, they're really isolated
they're
in
recluse.
My mind.
They're
a little bit recluse. But that's all to say that we're recording this podcast in the middle of the desert. You can hear birds. You can hear a lot of ambient sound behind us. And we're really honestly outside with a peregrine falcon looking over your shoulder.
I mean, they're taken care of like spa. They have spa days. They travel VIP. You know, they live in the homes with their owners. I mean, this is like a real thing. And it's a subculture that I think a lot of people would be interested to know because I had no idea about. And then getting into this subculture, I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Honestly, you have to hear the conversation between me and Henry Dutoit.
You got it. That's perfect.
Very, very fascinating, man. This is what this podcast is about, is meeting extraordinary people all over the world from cultures or subcultures that you've never heard of. And I promise you, this is one of them.
Yeah. So our guest, Henry, is a senior falconer at Platinum Heritage Desert Camp, which is an ecotourism company that aims to preserve the cultural heritage of Dubai. He's been at this for 14 years. And the moment we met him, we knew he was one of those people who leads with passion. As you've heard, falconry takes a lot of dedication. One of the first things I learned about Henry is that he has two falcons in his house right now, and he watches football with them. He shares a sofa with them. He cooks with them, you name it. That's all a part of the training, but the whole point is that the falcons come first, no matter what. So does it get lonely? Is it dangerous? What does the life of a falconer look like? Why is it such a big deal in the UAE? We're about to find out.
Just as a heads up, this episode is sponsored by GuideGeek, a new way to plan travel. It's an AI chatbot built on OpenAI. But what's cool is that it's actually curated by human travel experts at Matador Network, the world's largest independent travel publisher. I've been using it for a while now, mostly on WhatsApp, but you can use it on Instagram Messenger too. I often ask for advice on what neighborhoods to stay in when I'm booking my accommodations, which has been super freaking helpful. So head to GuideGeek.com to try GuideGeek for free and start planning your next trip. That's GUIDEGEEK.com to start planning your next trip with your newest AI travel assistant. It's pretty amazing that you're sitting here right now with a falcon on your arm talking to me, and there's a falcon behind me. What's going on? I mean, it's a little terrifying, to be honest with you. I mean, Is this legal? Like, do you need a license for this? I'm a little bit confused.
Yeah, so firstly, welcome. And this little guy on my hand, his name is Ziggy. And Ziggy is a 3-year-old male peregrine falcon. And yeah, here in Dubai, it's legal to have a falcon, fly them, go hunt with them. But you can't hunt native indigenous species out here. You need to go leave the country to certain countries where you can go hunt with your falcons because native wildlife and so is protected out here now. But a lot of other countries, you need permits and special licenses and so to keep a falcon.
Just but to have
here,
a falcon.
Yeah, but here in the UAE, it's not needed, yeah.
Wait, so you're saying I can go right now, pay you whatever money you need and take that falcon home with me and everything would be okay?
You can. There's a falcon market in Dubai. You can walk into a falcon shop now. You can pick your falcon. You can take it home, go train it and go fly.
That's freaking amazing. But like, obviously, I would, if it was me and I took it home, by the time I got home, it probably wouldn't be with me anymore, I would assume.
Yeah, I would not advise that. you need some special training to look after these guys, give them the best training, the best life as possible. So yeah, they need some special training and attention, special housing. They need special food and all of that. So it's not like a parrot you can just keep at home in a cage and give them some seeds.
But
or
it's
some
legal.
And so. It's legal. It's legal. Yes.
It's kind of like, I would imagine, like maybe if I wanted to get a Rottweiler and I wasn't really a good trainer, it might be not the best decision to have a Rottweiler.
You might regret it after a while. Yes.
Okay, let's baseline real quick because I think it's super interesting. You were saying that, you were saying something about hunting with falcons, right? I mean, is that where it originated from? Is that where falconry or falcon training started?
So give you a bit of a background information about falconry and why falconry is so important here in the Middle East and specifically in the United Arab Emirates. The main reason why falcons are important today, it's a 2,000-year-old history where wow. Falcons were used for hunting out in the desert. Now imagine a Bedouin's living out in the desert many years ago. There was no supermarket or KFC. They could quickly go buy food for their families. So if you had a falcon, you could go hunt with your falcon. And you could hunt something like a hubara, like quite a big-sized bird we get out here, like a chicken-sized bird. Your desert hare, Franklin's partridge.
So the falcon themselves kill the animal. They are not only the hunting companion, but the hunter.
That's it. They go hunt the food. But whenever they are successful with the hunt, the falcon will not bring the food back to you. So they don't play fetch. Like you get with dogs that you can throw a ball and they'll stick it and yeah. They'll bring it back to you. Falcons don't do that. So you will need to go to your falcon as quickly as possible once the hunt is successful. And then it's a bit of like a trade-off that you have to do to take the food away from the falcon to feed your family without the falcon thinking you're stealing the food.
So you have a little bit of food with you, I assume, that you're doing a trade with.
Yeah.
So you can get your big prey back.
And still reward
and
the
falcon.
And also
reward the falcon.
That's the main thing, because it's all about positive reinforcement with these guys. You can't cheat them, because they're going to remember that. It's like, listen, yesterday this guy stole all my food. This is not a good deal we've got going on, yeah? And you're going to start having problems with your falcon. So yeah, you need to do a bit of a trade with your falcon.
Wait. I think that's super interesting. You're saying that they're so smart that you do not want to take advantage of them. They understand if you're taking advantage of them. But more so what I'm hearing is, taking advantage seems like more of a human quality, right? There's a trust level there with you and the falcon, right?
It's basically, he knows he's going to get the easy food from me. That's why we're part of the relationship. It's a food-based relationship. So if it's positive reinforcement, there's always food coming. So when I approach him, there's always food coming. So if he sits on a kill and I approach him and just take the food away every day, this is going to be negative because now the food's going to keep disappearing and he's not getting fed up. He's not getting full of food.
It's kind of like me and my wife, actually. That's the relationship that we have. So
I will normally say it's like husband and wife. If wife doesn't cook, husband doesn't come home. So it's very
the
much
difference is I'm the cook.
So it's the other way around.
Yeah, he doesn't.
She
cook.
Will come back.
It gets serious for sure.
But no. So where in the hierarchy is? Well, first of all, let's back out. What is this beautiful falcon's name on your arm?
So his name is Ziggy, and he's a 3-year-old male peregrine falcon. He's a COVID baby. He was born in 2020 during COVID times. He's a male peregrine falcon, and what's quite unique from the peregrine falcons as well as your fastest animals on the planet. A lot of people assume a cheetah is your fastest animal. They can do about 100 kilometers an hour, about 60 miles an hour for a short distance. The fastest speed that's been recorded for a falcon was a female peregrine falcon, and they recorded 389 kilometers an hour.
Wow.
So it will be about 241 miles.
Wow.
But falcons are cheating. It's where they go up high and they dive down.
That puts like a Lamborghini in the dust, almost.
It does, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, what you're looking at, a peregrine falcon, these are the fastest creatures on the planet. It's a peregrine falcon. It's absolutely incredible to see them fly.
I read that something when they dive down, they like move their body in a certain way that gives them like the aerodynamic of a bullet.
They go into a teardrop shape and they'll open a wing slightly to just steer them a little bit left and right, but it's just like a bomb just diving down of a teardrop shape. And it's all about aerodynamics. So a lot of designs on aeroplanes come from the shape of wings of birds in wow. general as well. Yeah,
that's fascinating.
Yeah, they just tuck their wings in a teardrop and just stoop down. I mean, can still pump the wings and go faster than gravity.
Wow. I mean, talking about wives, I mean, you talk about this bird very, I would say, high regard. How does your wife feel about this relationship?
So when we started dating about 4.5 years ago, so it was something she quickly had to get used to. It was part of the package. Because there's always used to a bird in a house, a falcon or some baby owls running around, part of the training and things. So it can get quite messy. So yeah, she had to get quite used to it very quickly. But like I was not a cat person before and she loves cats. So she brought cats into the relationship. I brought birds into the relationship. So we sort of cancel each other out on that one.
How do the cats and the birds get along?
They actually get well quite along. I don't think all cats will be, but yeah, our cats quickly got used to the birds and they don't make
These aren't Tweety birds, right? This is a big bird.
Intimidating birds.
Yeah, that cat's not just like... So how long have you been doing this?
So I've been doing falconry now 12 years full-time and 14 years part-time. So 14 years in total, but 12 years full-time, yeah.
That's a long time.
It was not planned. So to give you a bit of a background of where I come from, coming from South Africa is a big wildlife industry. And since a young kid, I always wanted to be involved with animals. So after school, I went to go study nature conservation. So I worked as a conservationist in some of the national parks in South Africa. So, of course, with big wildlife. I had no experience of falcons. I had an idea what falconry is about. But, of course, we get lots of birds of prey in South African wild. So I moved to Dubai in 2010 to co-work in a Dubai Desert Conservation Reserve. I worked there as a desert guide, which all the desert activities, and falconry was one of the activities.
Wow.
And that's where I got introduced to falcons, birds of prey and falconry. I absolutely loved it. I did that for about 1.5 years and then I had the opportunity to go do it full time. And I was never looking back after that.
So you're kind of living your dream right now, right?
Basically, So I always wanted to be with wildlife or animals. Falcons was not part of that plan, but now I can't see myself doing anything else. So what was supposed to be a 2-year plan and then move back to South Africa, that's never happened because it's now almost 14 years later and there's no plans, yeah.
And we're here at this is a falcon department. Tell us about that.
Yeah, where are we right now?
Yeah, so we're now in an area called Labab in Dubai, sort of a small farming community outside Dubai city in the desert. And this is a farm that we basically keep and house all our birds. This is where we do most of the training and behind the scenes of training and flying the birds. And so that's where we are based this morning. And yeah, so living out in the middle of nowhere, out in the desert outside Dubai city.
It's staring at me right now, I feel like. You know what's interesting? Ziggy, was it?
Ziggy,
I don't
yes.
want to disrespect the falcon. His name behind me?
So that's a female peregrine we've got behind you. So her name is Nova. She's a little bit bigger. If you look at the size, your males are slightly smaller while your females are bigger in your birds of prey.
And how come Ziggy doesn't have a eye mask on? And
so you can see his eyes open. He's looking around. He's enjoying
scary,
the view.
Man.
It's got a bit of an intimidating stare on him. So what we've got here, this is called a burqa in Arabic. It's the same which the ladies are wearing to cover the face.
A burqa, yeah.
Now, this is just to close the eyes of a falcon. So if you close the eyes of a falcon, it just completely calms them down. And it looks bad. If you're going to close my eyes, I'm gonna freak out. I'm watching too many scary movies. But our imagination goes crazy. But for birds, it's the opposite. You might be familiar with the English term out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, yeah.
It originates from falconry, where it comes from.
Really?
So if you close the eyes, you switch the bird down. It's like an off button. You might have seen this before. If someone has a parrot or a bird at home, they keep them in a cage. And at nighttime, they normally put like a towel or blanket over the cage to make them sleep nicely. If you've got a noisy parrot, keep them quiet. It's exactly the same concept. We just don't keep a falcon in a cage. The rest is only on for short periods of the day, about 2-3 hours or so, when we're mostly transporting the falcons or when they're in an environment when there's lots of people or things around. And traditionally, when this was used by the Bedouins as well, so imagine you go out hunting, as we talked about the hunting earlier, you're riding your camel, or you're riding your horse, and your falcon is sitting on your arm and the eyes are open. There's a small bird that comes flying past. Your falcon want to go hunt that small bird. But now you can't feed, firstly, your falcon and secondly, your family with that small bird. There's not enough meat. So you're going to keep the eyes closed till you find something big like the hubara or the desert hare. That's the moment you open the eyes. That's what the falcon see, and hopefully the hunt is successful. So it also allows you to select what you want to hunt with your falcon.
Wow, wow, wow.
So it's quite an important piece of falconry. I can't imagine falconry without the burqa.
And it looks like a little ski mask made out of leather.
So you get lots of different designs and colors these days. It's made out of leather. It's all handmade specifically for the size of the falcon.
It kind of looks like a Harley Davidson seat or something. I don't know. Are these techniques been passed down from 2,000 years ago? Is there something new in falconry that hasn't been around? Or are this the same traditions and the same training practices that 2,000 years ago were like?
So the hood has been coming a long way. So it's basically since the beginning of falconry. New technology that we have today is this GPS equipment that we attach to the birds. We attach a small little GPS on his back. He's got a little backpack. It's fin strapped. It comes around the chest. So we accessorize the falcons as well. Now, if that little GPS is connected to my phone, and on my phone, I've got a Find My Falcon app. So that's in case Ziggy decides he wants to go.
No, you don't. It's not called Find My Falcon.
Not officially, but we call it the Find My Falcon app. It's actually Marshall Radio Telemetry. It's a company based in the States that specializes in making tracking equipment for falcons. And yeah, on this app on my phone, on Google Maps, I can get the exact location where Ziggy is at each given time. I can get the height, the distance, the speed, and all of that information. So we've got some amazing technology that we have that moved with modern times. But yeah, traditionally, we've got the glove and things that's always been used. Other equipment we have is the little leather anklets that we've got around the legs. We've got the leash and the jesses that we've got here. Other modern technology that we have as well is drones and aeroplanes, remote control RC aeroplanes that we use as well. So we attach a long line of some food at the end of a drone or an RC plane. And now you fly off the plane and this falcon goes off hunting.
See, I'd pay to see that. I don't know about the air balloon. I'd be a little scared, but I'd pay to see that for sure.
So that's also modern technology, is where we can get a new level of fitness out of a captive falcon. Because, of course, captive falcons is not going to be as fit and strong as wild falcons. So the traditional way that we train the falcons, we swing some food around. Falcons circle around and do all these dives to try to catch this food as we swing around. Now, if there's new modern technology with drones, we can attach it and we can go up high and high. And this falcon needs to circle and circle and circle
Poor
to
guy.
Get high. So it's like we're running up the stairs. It's getting a good workout for the falcons. And if you have a fit, strong falcon, you've got a healthy falcon as well. So, and that's why it's important to fly them every day. And that's where falcon belongs as well, as up in the sky.
Are you using Ziggy, for example, for hunting, or is it just a showbird?
So we just use him for demonstrations where we fly him for guest interaction is where Ziggy's flying. So we
also
don't
keep
do any
the tradition, I would say, is probably important too, right?
Yeah. So basically, because hunting has been illegal now for quite a while in the UAE, a big thing where the young generation of Emiratis or so is getting involved in falconry is falcon racing, which is a very popular sport out there. And that's being so popular, where a lot of young people are now again is getting involved in the traditional art of falconry.
Without the hunting, though.
Without the hunting, yeah. So it's doing the falcon racing, which is a big sport out there.
So talk me through the racing. I can't even imagine. Are there drones? There must be drones involved. I mean, I don't understand. How do you control where they go?
So in the actual racing is where you sort of use the traditional technique where we have a lure. We swing the foot around. And my friend will release the falcon 400 meters away. So we do like a sprint race with a falcon, a 400-meter sprint race. We don't have 10 falcons line up in the race each other.
That's what I was imagining.
You're
right
just going to see puffs of feathers. The falcons don't like each other that much. So we do one falcon at a time, and they do a time trail where they do it past a time sensor, 400 meters, and a finish line. I see which falcon can do this in the quickest time. Of the fastest falcons, they do that 400 meters in about 16 to 17 seconds, which they do.
Wow. So that's 1,200 feet. Oh my God.
So it's quite fast, which they do that speed, yeah, in straight flights.
400 meters is longer than a football field.
It is. It's a drag race.
Yeah.
It's what it basically is.
That
is
impressive.
Yeah. So it's very popular out there.
Do any of these races, Ziggy race or anything like that?
We don't do racing ourselves. We've done some racing a little bit times in the back in the past, but that's a full time as well, because you need to condition your falcon for the racing as well. And we've got quite a big team of birds that we fly every day and all the falcon demonstrations and falcon shows that we do. So unfortunately, we don't have time to do the racing, but we've done it in the past. Yeah.
And is there big prize money, like horses or?
Yeah, there's big prize money and so involved, and gifts like cars and things that gets won. So it's a big thing out there. Yeah, it's very, very popular throughout the Arabian Peninsula, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates. It's a big, big thing out there, which every country has its own sort of national race. And then, of course, here in the UAE, every emirate has its own individual racing as well. So like Abu Dhabi will have falcon racing competition, Dubai, Sharjah.
Do they come together like a World Cup too? Or?
Basically, yeah. Wow. And some people come from Qatar or Saudi to come participate out here as well. And
I mean, talk about interesting subculture that nobody talks about.
Yeah.
Right?
Is it like horse racing where the trainer matters and the falcon matters?
Yes, yeah. Because to talk about a trainer and the birds, you need someone special to work with the birds. We're going to open Ziggy's eyes again, yes, so you can have a look around. Enjoy to be part of the conversation. So if you want to work with animals, you need to have a passion for animals. Not everyone can work with animals. So if you want to train the birds, you need someone that's really going to put the effort and the time in to work with these birds. They don't understand the concept of off days or public holidays and things like that. They don't understand an 8-hour working day as well. Yeah. So with animals, you need to sort of put that on the background and things like that. So you need to have a lot of passion to work with these animals. If they get sick, you know, example, if you have to feed them every 2 hours through the night to keep them strong and things like that.
I mean, what you're describing is like a vicious killing child, basically.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly.
It's like I have a 2-year-old. You just, a lot of the things you describe are similar. The only difference is that my 2-year-old can't gouge my eyeball out. It's mad.
It's an apex predator, but yeah, they have us by the point of our hearts, basically, which they have. So now they're absolutely incredible birds. Now, talk about incredible. In Arabic, their name is Shaheen. And Shaheen is a beautiful name because in the old Persian language, Shaheen means king of birds or king of sky. So it's a very descriptive name for a peregrine falcon. And that's what they are, king of the birds. Yeah, they're absolutely incredible birds. Have a look at what he's going to do now. Having a rouse. It's like shaking all the feathers. It's just getting all the feathers in place and things like that. So
his whole body moved at once.
I think he's ready to pounce or something. You know, backtracking a little bit on the racing, because you said they travel from place to place for this World Cup. I remember seeing an image or a video of falcons, hundreds of them, in a plane, like having their own seats, sitting on top of the seats.
So to give you an idea, for Ziggy, you can get a UAE passport. Same for Nova. So actually, Ziggy has traveled to Saudi Arabia before. So we did a balloon festival in Saudi Arabia. So he's got a UAE passport. He traveled across the border. And so with that passport, you can actually buy a flight ticket for your Falcon on the airlines here in the Middle East.
Wait. Don't gloss over this. I know this is stuff that you're used to, but I am just, my mind is being blown right now. The bird, Ziggy, could have a passport.
He's got a UAE passport.
He has one.
So I've been here for 14 years. I can't get a UAE passport. He has a UAE passport.
Okay, let's back out again. We got to walk through this thing, okay? He has a passport.
He's got one, yes.
It says Ziggy.
Yes.
Does he have a last name?
So no, he doesn't have a last name. So he's got his identification number, which is like his passport number, which is here on the leg, basically. And that's all in the information, a microchip as well. There's all the information's in a passport as well.
No picture. Like that would be amazing.
So it's quite unique, and also it just shows you how special and how unique falcons are, part of the region and the UAE, where you can actually get a passport for them. You buy a flight ticket, they go in the cabin with the rest of the passengers. We don't transport them in a crate like your favorite dog or cat. When you transport, you put them in a crate and they go in a cargo.
Yeah.
We don't do that with the Falcon. So they put a special plastic fitting that fits in the seats of the plane. Of course, they're going to go to the toilet along the way and things. You can't potty train a Falcon.
Oh, you don't take it to the bathroom?
No. Okay. So there's a special plastic fitting that goes on a seat, so it's easy to clean afterwards. And there your Falcon travels. Normally, it's in first class and business class, while the trainer will be in economy class, for example. So
he's got a bed. You know, he's getting into bed, you know?
That's it. That's it. Living the life.
He must rack up some really big credit card points or flying points, I'd assume.
You can, because a lot of the guys out here, they don't always have their private jet. So, yeah, they need to buy a few tickets again, for the Falcons and go.
No, but this is what I understand. So, can you get Ziggy an Emirates mileage plan?
I haven't heard of the mileage plan, like Skywards and things for your Falcon. I'm not sure about that one.
I mean, if he's flying first class everywhere he goes, he could rack up a bunch of miles.
I think that the shops, when you want to use your miles at a hotel or so, they say, where's the Falcon? Where does this points come from?
Okay, I don't want to stay on this too long, but it's just fascinating to me. So you're telling me that if I go on a plane, but this has to be just Emirates flights, right? Or Arabic flights.
Exactly. It's only the airlines here in the Middle East that allows it. Like Emirates,
you're
not gonna to
get
fly
on
Dubai
United
and things.
Yeah. You're not going to get on a United flight. And
no. Also not like British Airways or
anything.
Okay.
So I just want to clarify that. But if I happen to fly on Emirates one day, I can afford it, and I'm in first class one day, you know, probably never, but let's say I do, I could coincidentally be sitting next to a Falcon.
Exactly, yeah.
And I couldn't say anything. Right, he has more rights than me.
Yeah. So exactly. And especially this time of the year, in the winter months, it's not too unusual to see people boarding flights at Dubai International with Falcons. My fiance, she's cabin crew. So she flies for Fly Dubai, and she'll often message me and say, oh, we've got a Falcon on board today. So
wow.
Yeah, they do travel on the airlines, yeah.
I mean, that has got to be the craziest thing I've ever heard. I swear to God. What I've been hearing from you is so much passion. That's the first thing I grasp. I mean, from the moment we met, even off camera, off mic, the way that you speak about Ziggy, but birds and in animals in general is just absolutely amazing. I mean, you just do this because you love it? I mean, what is it?
I'm not a person that will go sit in the office and do an office job or things like that. I'm an outdoor person. And yeah, just working with the birds, it's worth it. Getting up early in the mornings every day before sunrise. We finish after sunset because we try to fly the birds in the coolest times of the day, which is early mornings and late afternoons, which is also the traditional times when the birds will be up and flying. That's when you wake up in the morning, you hear all the birds in the background, this early mornings or late in the evenings. And that's when we need to be active as well. So yeah, it's always a pleasure working with these birds.
It seems like you're almost like the epitome of if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
I mean, I see the smile on your face. It's amazing to see people that like live their dreams, right? I'm a big proponent of that myself. I'm always speaking about how life is so short, right? And this idea of death is around the corner. And if we don't do what we love most of the week, most of the year, what are we doing?
Exactly. It's make the most of what you have.
And the interesting part is that everybody's idea of living that dream life or living that life is different, right? I personally, I mean, you probably couldn't pay me enough money to be sitting with a falcon on my arm right now, right? I mean, I'm a little bit pooping myself right now, to be honest. But the idea is that you are in love with it, right? I'm in love with something else. Other people are in love with other things. And I think the biggest advice that anybody in our position, which is we do what we love, knock on wood, is to.
Yeah, you need to find your passion in life. And once you found it, you just hold on to it because that makes every day worth it. It makes worth waking up in the morning, go through the day, and, you know, next day we continue with this. So now you need to have a passion, and once you have it, just grab on.
Yeah, it's interesting. I can't remember who said this, but it was like, find what you love. And then go get good at it.
That's it, yes.
That's an easy formula right there, right?
And that's what I had to do in the beginning. Once I got involved with Falcons, and I absolutely realized, wow, this is awesome. There's a lot of learning you have to go do to understand the birds, to read their body language, of course, the history and all of that involved. So it's a lot of things I had to go. I've got a small library full of falconry books. I have to go read and online videos and listening to other podcast about falcons and falconry things. So there's a lot of things you have to go learn and things like that. It's not where someone has to spoon feed you. You have to go out and go do this by yourself.
Live it and
breathe
it.
You have to chase it, yeah.
It seems that, like you said, I mean, if I'm gonna quote you, there is no breaks when it comes to animals, when it comes to birds. They don't know what holidays are. So that means you're spending your Christmas, your Thanksgiving, your Kwanzaa, your Eid al-Mubarak, your anything.
So basically, even now, after two birds in my house on my off day, I still need to train them. I still need to feed them. There's still a cleaning that needs to be done and things like that. So So even on off days and public holidays, you still, to a certain degree, you are involved with the birds. And
but do you get a break is what I'm asking?
So yeah, we do get a bit of break in between. We don't always have a bird in the house of us, a part of the training and things. Then some of my colleagues will look after the bird. To give you an idea, I've got one falcon I've been flying for the last 12 years. It's a female peregrine falcon, trainer from a young bird. And we've been together all this time. She's quite unique. She doesn't want to really fly to anyone else except to me. So when I go on holiday, which is once a year, for that 1 month or so, she doesn't want to fly to anyone. She's just being very difficult. So she just gets fat and lazy for that month because she doesn't want to fly to everyone. She just gets lots of food. And then once I get back from holidays, then I have to work her fitness up again and get her going again and get the muscle back. And so we do get time.
What's
to
the
get
longest you stay away from the birds?
So that will be normally in the summer months when it's our quiet period. Also, we can't fly all our birds in the summer months. It's just too hot. So that's when we take our yearly annual leave that we'll take. And that's normally about 30 days. So that's the longest that will be. And then our working week consists of 6 working days and then 1 off day. And that's normally when you try to get a bit of a break on an off day, yeah.
You got to take Ziggy or one of your birds with you back home one day.
Flight. It is possible. I would like to. It is possible. But I have no plans to go back. So that's not in the pipeline, yes.
You love UAE. You love Dubai.
Dubai is a good place to be. So it's super safe. Coming from South Africa, we have some safety issues.
I was doing an interview the other day, and that was the first thing I said. I said, I've never felt more safe anywhere in the world.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, people can have their stigmas about the Middle East or about Dubai or whatever it may be, these kind of preconceived notions. But I've been all around the world, and I've never felt safer in anywhere here. I mean, I leave my phone, I walk away, I go to the beach, I come back, my phone is there.
To give you an idea, as we transport the birds in a car, of course, we leave the car running with the air conditioning. So we'll quickly stop in a shop or so to grab a drink or so. We have the falcon in the car, the engine is running, air conditioning. You go into the shop, get your things, come back out, and your car will still be there with everything inside.
Yeah, that's not happening in LA. I'll tell you
that's the same as well. So yeah, it's a super safe place to be. It's a very interesting place as well, because you meet people from all across the world. It's the center point between Asia, Africa, and Europe. So a lot of people travel out here, so we meet people from all over. It's an amazing place to travel from as well. I love to go travel as well, do backpacking. So once a year when it's our holiday time, it's easy, short flights to travel
everywhere.
From here, yeah. So yeah. It's a perfect traveling hub.
Dubai sometimes gets a little bit of a stigma of a lack of culture. Like it's this kind of place where it's so new. But I've been here for a month now. And there's culture here.
There's a lot of culture. So unfortunately, what a lot of people do when they come and visit Dubai, they just see all the big 5-star hotels and the shopping malls. And they don't really leave Dubai city, the modern part. There's an old Dubai, which is with lots of tradition and history out there as well. If you come out into the desert as well, the thing is they need to start interacting with some of the local population. Go to the camel areas where the people are training the camels and things like that. So there's a lot of tradition and history out there. People just need to go out and go find it.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely the traditional UAE, but there's something. We were at a restaurant the other day, and the gentleman who was cooking, it was called Moonrise, and he has this menu and he's saying it's this international language speaking about this region, you know, this idea. Well, what was he saying again? What was that quote he had? He said,
take all the international ingredients to make a story just about Dubai, because Dubai has so much of international influence, and that makes a whole new identity in itself.
Yeah, I mean, in essence, that's pretty fascinating, right? This idea that it's a new country, and it's welcoming all other countries to come. And in essence, it's almost building a new culture for the future, while still have the foundation of what you said, the falconry, the camels, the Bedouin experiences in the desert, et cetera, et cetera. But it's definitely, it's a fascinating city. I mean,
it is. And also what's quite unique is we have all these nationalities coming together, is where everybody accept each other. A lot of countries, when neighboring countries don't accept each other, when they come out here, they do accept each other. So it's quite unique as well. And a lot of children that's been raised here now, it's called an international accent, where they don't talk the accent from their parents from the native countries. They talk an international accent. It's completely unique and different, and as well to Dubai as well.
Well, you know what, Henry? You're one of only three Falconers I know, and you're all of you guys are South African. So is that a big expat?
How many Falconer people do you know?
I know Henry, I know Werner, and I know Lushano now.
Okay, I know those guys too. I'm just saying, who are these other guys you're talking about? I don't know.
So it's quite unique because falconry is not a big thing in South Africa. It's not a traditional thing in South Africa. There is falconry in South Africa. It's a small group that does participate in it, but it's not a big thing. So,
How did you find each other then? I don't understand.
So we all come from a wildlife industry, from animal industry, which is a big thing in South Africa. So we all moved to Dubai. Lushano actually started the falconry in Botswana, as where he started, which is one of the neighboring countries of South Africa. With bird abatement, we fly falcons on some of the farmlands to chase birds away, not to damage the food, the crops. But like for myself and Werner and some of the other South Africans that's involved in falcons out here, we're coming from a wildlife industry, which you need to have the passion to work with falcons. So already you have that passion of animals. And we all come to Dubai to do something similar with wildlife or the desert environment, conservation work. And got involved with falcons, and we've got hooked by it. But falconry is a big thing. There's a lot of falconers all across the world. And even here in the Middle East as well, there's a lot of other falconers that comes and fly birds and train birds out here. But about 60% of the world's falconers is based in the Middle East. It just gives you an idea how big falconry is out here.
What do you say your hardest, what is the hardest part about your job? I mean, is it dangerous? Is there something that could happen that could get hurt? I mean, this bird is right now fully 180 his neck. His radius, he's turned all the way behind him. He looks dangerous.
So to give an idea, I still have all my fingers. Okay. It's all still there.
I can vouch for that too, by the way. Okay.
All the parts are still there. Of course, if you're going to mistreat him, you might end up with a few scratches and things like that. But in the end of the day, if you treat him well, we are not food, so it's not finger snacks or anything like that. If you mistreat him, they can be dangerous, but they can't be deadly. They will not. And normally also a natural thing for animals, they try to avoid people. It's very rare for animals to attack people. You need to do something wrong. You need to push them in a corner or treat them badly.
Well, what about those orcas, like off the coast of Portugal? Have you heard about that?
Oh, would they attack the boats or something?
I mean,
or?
It happened, like 2 weeks ago, it happened again. There's sinking boats out there. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I don't know what's the reason why the orcas try to take down
it's
all the boats
world.
Or things
it's
like
sea
that.
SeaWorld. Okay, I know the answer.
It's payback
okay?
time.
They've been hearing about SeaWorld. Okay, it's made it all the way to Portugal.
Yeah. So no, these guys are not dangerous or anything like that. Eagles can be a little bit different as well. Eagles are just much bigger and more powerful. But also, if you treat them well, they'll treat you well.
What do they eat?
So we feed them a mixture between quail and day-old chicks.
Where do you get the quail from?
So the quail is actually imported from France. So it's French cuisine they eat every day. So good quality food.
Right? First-class seats in Emirates and quail from France.
Live in big rooms with air conditioning, five-star accommodation. So living the Dubai life, basically.
Whoever hears me out there, I want to come back as a falcon one day.
That's it. I normally say that as well. If you want to come back as a falcon.
And this really in itself is a little bit of conservation because they live way more... Their life is longer here than it is in the wild, no?
Yeah. So in captivity, the life expectancy, you can expect about 20 years or so.
Holy, that's long.
So yeah, in the wild, you're looking about 10 years, give or take.
And is that because of predators or?
Every day you need to fight for your own food. When you go hunting, whatever you're hunting is fighting back to survive as well as surviving of the fittest and the strongest. So you can get injured in the process.
But is it
well.
Starvation? Is it predators? Like, what's the number one cause?
So their number cause for death in the wild is other birds of prey.
Okay.
So falcons, predators. Eagles and things like that. Power lines, electrocution, wind turbines for electricity, which is also a big thing. Wind turbines, unfortunately, kills a lot of the birds in the process. And sadly, a big thing is the illegal trade of birds of prey. There's a big market. There's a lot of value to them. And of course, when it's value to something, there's a black market. So that's unfortunate. A lot of the birds get trapped illegally out of the wild, and a lot of them die in the process and the transportation. That's the sad part of the industry of falconry, sort of the black market, right?
So I don't think most people would be surprised to hear the fact that humans are the issue.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's the case of most extinctions or so around the world and things. But also there's a silver lining as well. To give you an idea about peregrine falcons, they were basically extinct in the United States in the 1970s due to DDT, which is a poison that was used. So the poison didn't kill the falcons itself. When they laid the eggs, the calcium structure of the eggshell was not strong enough due to the poison.
Sorry, I apologize. I don't mean. What do you mean by poison? Who let go of the poison?
So DDT was a poison that was used in the farms and things like that.
Okay, got it. Okay. So some sort of pesticide.
Got it. And that poison affect the egg structure of the falcons. When they were laying the eggs were not strong enough when they were hatching. So they keep breaking the eggs as they're trying to hatch them because it's not enough. The calcium content is not strong enough. So there was no new falcons being born for a few generations, peregrine falcons. So of course their numbers just started declining. And then because of falconers that started breeding with the peregrine falcons and
racing and sport.
And legislation that changed where the poison became illegal, it's not allowed to use the poison anymore. So all the falconers that released falcons back into the wild, the peregrine falcons started climbing again in the States, and they're one of the most common birds of prey in the States now. So there's a silver lining too as well. So when people come together and do something positive, it can fix the problems as well. Yeah.
I wish that we would do that more often with everything. You know, I feel like nowadays everyone's red or blue or black or white or, you know, whatever. I'm just like, we can't just not only have a conversation with each other. We can't even disagree. It's like, if we can't disagree, I mean, I remember I had a mentor once and said, listen, if you're really good friends with someone or a business partner with someone, you might get into a fist fight, but you walk out and you have a beer together at the end of it, right? Yeah. It's just the way that it is.
You get over it and you go on.
You get over and you go on, right? Isn't that like the story of life? Shouldn't it be that way? I mean, we can't even disagree anymore in life. If we do, it seems like one person is wrong, one person is right. Why can't two people be too right at the same time?
We hold too tight to grudges.
That's what it is. Yeah. Well, on that note, I think I always like to ask one very important question whenever I meet someone extremely interesting. If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be and why?
Okay, that's an interesting question.
Anywhere.
So anywhere.
Money is not an issue. You got 20 million in the bank. Where would you live?
I would love to go do falconry in the States.
Okay.
I traveled for a month and a half through the States a few years back. All the way from Miami, Washington, all the way across the States to Los Angeles, to Hawaii. And I went to visit Yellowstone National Park for a week. Absolutely loved it there. Falconry is a big thing out there as well. So I can still practice falconry out there as well and live in a remote outdoors. So that's probably what I would choose is that destination. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, it's in the universe now. Andrew, thank you so much. Vanessa, I don't know if you had anything else to follow up on. This has been such a fantastic conversation, not only about inspiration about life, but also the love of animals. So I think, thank you again.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for coming out.
Appreciate it.
That was so much fun.
You know what was fun was having a freaking scary ass bird look at me the entire time I'm trying to do an interview.
Did that put extra pressure on you?
I mean, there was one to my left. There was one in front of me. Once he took off the blindfolds off the falcon that he was with, I'm like, oh, we're done. We're all done.
I especially enjoy when they turn their heads full circle exorcist style, you know,
because it's kind of that.
Yeah, because it's very unexpected.
Okay, but that, I don't know if the word enjoyment comes to mind when this animal can literally twist its head 360 degrees and just pounce at any moment, grab your eyeballs and eat them.
No, you know that, you know better now. They don't grab your eyeballs if you treat them right. And those guys are getting French cuisine. They're getting the best treatment there is.
But we also know they have no affinity to anyone, even the person who picks his Netflix shows depending on his falcon's mood.
Okay, fine. I like to see it. That's it.
You know what's even crazier is that obviously the taxi driver did not come and pick us up on our way out.
That's true.
And so one of the falcon trainers drove us back to our condo. And so he's like, you want to see the falcon market? I'm like, heck yeah. In the back of my head, I was like, man, I think TikTok is going to ream me about this being inhumane of some sorts, but I have to see it with my own eyes.
Yeah.
And when we got there, it was this beautiful palace in the middle of the deserts. Super air conditioned, beautiful, and everything you can think of to do with falcons, and then specific rooms where falcons would actually be sold in. And there was like in each room, I'd say there was probably about 15 to 20, which was
each store.
Each
it's
store,
like a store,
yeah, each store
with a bunch of perches and maybe, 15 falcons
each.
Yeah.
And what I asked was, how long do they stay here? Like, not even a week. Like that's how fast these falcons are going. And they're being sold from anywhere between like 300 to 25,000. It's just it's a super, super interesting world to dive into. This is what this podcast is about, people. No Fixed Address, the world's most extraordinary people that you've probably never heard of. We should probably add that to the end of the subtitle, too. Is it too long?
This is a tad long.
If you guys want to reach out to these guys, they're at Platinum Heritage. Just go to Platinum Heritage. Just Google Platinum Heritage. You'll figure it out. And in Dubai, it's a fantastic experience. But yeah, listen free and subscribe on Apple or Spotify. We publish a new episode every other Thursday.